Welcome to Move Like This, brought to you by the Accounting Move Project and sponsored by Moss Adams and Sapro. On this podcast, we share ideas and hear from guests about how they find, retain, develop, and advance women and other underrepresented groups in their accounting firms. Now, on to our guest. Hello, and welcome to today's episode of Move Like This from the Accounting Move Project. I am excited today to be talking to Trevor Williams, who is the DEI director at GRF CPAs and Advisors. So how are you doing today, Trevor?
Well, Ani, so good to see you again. I'm doing well. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, Trevor and I were on a CPA America panel together last year. So it's really nice to see you again today. And part of the reason that I was like, oh, I need to have Trevor on the podcast is I saw you were recently featured in an Accounting Today article about your DEI work at GRF, a firm that is based in Bethesda, Maryland. Before we dig too deep, I'd kind of like to hear what led to GRF hiring you, its first DEI director, and what your job responsibilities are for those that may not have someone in a role like that at their firm.
So prior to joining GRF, I was at another CPA firm in the DC, Maryland, and Virginia area. And at that particular firm, I did a lot of agreed upon procedures, audit assurance work, specifically SAS 70 engagements, now referred to as those SOP reports, and did an enormous amount of travel and had settled down, got married, had my first child, came home one day, and my son called me mommy. So I figured I needed to be home a little bit more. So a colleague that was familiar with GRF had mentioned to me that they were looking for some positions, and I went through the interview process and did very, very well and had an opportunity to meet some really great people at the organization, one of which was Michael Friedman, one of the founding partners. And I'll never forget during that interview process, we went through the standard questions. What are your goals? 5-year plan, 10-year plan, et cetera. And I had shared with him that, you know, my ultimate goal was to be the first Black partner at his firm. And he said, you know, that's a great goal to have. So then he dug a little bit deeper and then he asked me, so in your opinion, you know, what do you think that entails to become a partner at a CPA firm? And naturally, I'm thinking, you know, you got to have a tremendous book of business. And he gave me really, really good insight. And he said, that's true to a certain extent. However, you know, currently we have enough clients. If you provide our clients with a great service, very responsive, and provide technical expertise to them, they will turn you on to additional clients. And he couldn't have been more correct in that. So been at the firm for 20 years, became an audit partner in 2016, but had always had a passion for DEI. And thankfully, our firm did as well. I was the chair of our DEI committee, formalized in 2019, informally probably as early as 2017. As we continued to grow, and then obviously when we were all home due to COVID, we saw all of the things that transpired, culminating with the murder of George Floyd. Where a lot of organizations at that particular time began to really look at DEI. Thankfully, our firm was ahead of the curve, so we were proactive instead of being reactive.
I love that. And yeah, I mean, I'm happy for anybody to embrace DEI at any point. But the fact that you kind of had laid the foundation already when it really became a huge topic, just nationally through businesses, individuals, universities, everything, had to have kind of put you at a bit of an advantage, I would think.
Yeah, definitely so. Definitely so. As I mentioned, definitely is always in my book to be proactive rather than reactive. So it wasn't you had to make this decision just due to all of the public outcry and concern as it pertains to DEI. We were already doing things. And, you know, I think that at its most simplest terms, you know, we've always had the perspective of, you know, once you really get an opportunity to know a person as a person, any preconceived notions, biases, stereotypes, or even prejudices would slowly disappear. So again, from our early stages, we used to do things to ensure our staff had an opportunity to get to know the person. You know, we had events, we'd go out to lunch, various people throughout the department, and we would talk about things other than work, again, to increase, you know, our awareness of each other. And we've just taken it from there and just continued to move forward.
You hit on something there that I think is important, and I actually talk about quite often, is the goal of DEI is not necessarily to give anybody preference over anybody else. It's just to give opportunities to people that may not have had those opportunities in the past. And like you say, usually when you get a chance to actually sit down one-on-one with somebody, get to know them, you realize that there's a whole lot more similarities than there is differences.
Absolutely.
You know, whether that be race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, so many of those things that people kind of in some ways may feel uncomfortable around. When you really get to know somebody, those barriers tend to break down and you're like, oh yeah, we're all people with families and jobs and worries and all those kind of things. So I love that perspective. One of the things that I really love about what you GRF did and you did is that you took the rare and bold move of having the firm compile and publish its inaugural DEI report to show really the world the steps the firm has taken, as well as the results of those efforts to show accountability. It also features some employee spotlights and clearly defines the areas where improvement is needed and how you're going to address them. What made you decide to take this step, and how hard did you have to push to make it happen?
Oh, Bonnie, thank you for acknowledging that transparency report. Definitely, we've gotten a lot of feedback as a result of sharing that information. So thank you for highlighting that. I'll have to admit, you know, although I was the lead on it, it definitely was a collective effort. I have to give a special shout out to my chief marketing officer, as well as my DEI specialist at the firm, who definitely kept me on task to ensure that I was providing the necessary information to really have this transparency report be the best that it could possibly be. And to be perfectly honest with you, Bonnie, there were a couple revisions to the report. Again, just wanting to make sure that, you know, the various action items that we have in place were definitely in alignment with the organizational goals. So there have been some back and forth with regards to that, just making sure that there definitely was the alignment, as well as, you know, being as transparent as we possibly could be, because, you know, we had to start at some point and say, okay, this is the makeup of the firm. You know, this is where we would like the firm to go. So, you know, without acknowledging that, you can't really find a direction or the course that you need to take in order to achieve that goal. So that was important that we shared that information. And thankfully, because of the leadership buy-in that we have, I really didn't have hard, it wasn't that hard of a push to make in order to get this as a deliverable.
I say this all the time, leadership buy-in is probably the most important thing for a program to be successful.
Absolutely.
So moving on to a slightly different topic, I'm going to be speaking at the AIM Summit in a few weeks on the topic around kind of DEI skepticism. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on the fact that some companies, accounting firms included, are pulling back on their DEI commitment in the wake of the Supreme Court's affirmative action ruling against UNC and Harvard last year. DEI opponents saw this as a way to further politicize what is really a human issue. So how do we fight against this skepticism? And what do you say to those that feel this way?
Yeah, it's definitely an unfortunate occurrence that, you know, such commendable goals such as achieving equity, diversity, and making people feel included have now become weaponized terms. And it's extremely unfortunate that this is now the case. And now corporate America is having to navigate this minefield. To be perfectly honest, I think we all can agree, you know, the year ahead will definitely be extremely pivotal For corporate diversity efforts, as well as those attacks against the DEI efforts, it will intensify, unfortunately. But, you know, I will have to say that, you know, in some of the research that I've done, and a lot of the research that I've done, employers want to maintain a diverse workforce. They want to have a workforce where their employees are included, and they understand that it's a key part of attracting and maintaining talent. And it's definitely a talent shortage out here. And whatever organizations can do, including, you know, DEI efforts and making sure that the workforce is as diverse as it possibly could be, is a benefit. Recently, I did, our firm was part of a webinar, and one of the topics that I talked about, obviously, was DEI. And I had shared some statistics that I'd like to share with you as it pertains to this and just where employers are, as and even more importantly, where the employees are. So according to a 2022 Glassdoor survey, 80% of job seekers and employees feel, and this is aged 18 to 34, that they believe that a company's investment in DEI is an important factor for them when evaluating opportunities to take that job offer. Mm-hmm. That percentage is 74% aged 35 to 54, 67% aged 55 to 64, and 61% aged 65 and older. So as you can see, the numbers do not lie. Employees want to see diversity within the organizations that they join. Another stat that I'll share with you, Bonnie, is the fact that in a June 2020 report by McKinsey & Company reported 40% of the employees feel their companies aren't doing enough to inclusively hire members of the LGBTQ plus community. 15% of LGBTQ plus women believe their sexual orientation will negatively affect their career advancement at work. And for men, this number is double. Women value company investment in DEI and wouldn't work for a non-inclusive company. Additionally, corporate investment in DEI, I think we all can agree that in the year 2020 through 2021 and some of 2022, the investment in DEI was staggering. Everybody wanted to do something as it pertained to that. You know, unfortunately, in 2023, we've seen it stalled a bit, and we know why it's stalled a bit. But again, you know, I will have to say, you know, putting all personal agendas aside, now is definitely not the time to abandon your efforts to create a more diverse, equitable, and inclusive organization. Now is the time to assess whether your investment in DEI is achieving the desired outcomes. And I think we all can agree DEI is the driver of business. It's a competitive advantage. And those that excel in it will definitely outpace their competition in the marketplace.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And I will probably be stealing some of those statistics for my presentation.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm a little bit surprised by the 55 and over and 65 and over numbers. But then I think about, I'm very close to that bottom part of that range. And, you know, when I look at my friends and think of colleagues and such, most of them do feel that way. You know, it's the loud minority that sometimes skews what we think about the issues, and we can't let them lead the narrative.
I would agree. Absolutely.
So on a little bit of a different topic, for many people, diversity kind of boils down, or they think of it in terms of purely race and gender. And while those categories are incredibly important and things that we do need to look at as far as opportunities go, diversity really means a lot more than that. And I saw that you have also focused on the areas of neurodiversity and sexual orientation last year. And how do we better educate those at our firms about the breadth of diversity without watering down our efforts or spreading ourselves too thin, as it were?
Yeah, that's a good question. And specifically as it pertains to those two particular diversity characteristics, the neurodiversity and the sexual orientation lunch and learns that we had at the firm Those were probably two of our most largely attended virtual learning opportunities, and was definitely pleased by the outcome and the turnout and the engagement of our staff at the firm as it pertains to that, because it's definitely a learning experience for us all. No one has all the answers, and it's definitely a journey that we're all taking together. But, you know, more specifically in response to the question, Bonnie, I recently saw an article, and this was an article specifically for the tech and startup community. And in this article, it stated that there were 39 types of diversity in the workplace. Now, to be honest, I didn't know it was that many. And I haven't had the opportunity to take a deeper dive and research this or offer any opinions on it. But, you know, I will say 39 types of diversity, that's a lot. And I would say that the key to educating staff about the breadth of diversity without watering down the effort is to clearly identify and articulate what your DEI strategy and the company's business strategies are and make sure that they're aligned. I'd also say that it's important to regularly communicate this to all and to provide them with regular updates.
Yeah. I agree. I'm a part of the Association for Accounting Marketing DEI Committee. And I guess it was in March, we did a webinar all around neurodiversity. And it was fascinating because, you know, it was led by a woman that I just love and respect, Jana Etienne. And she talked about how there are certain situations where whatever your neurodiversity might be, actually puts you at a big advantage and your employer at a big advantage. You know, you tend to think of these things maybe in, you know, hopefully not, but sometimes it's viewed in negative ways. But, you know, we're all unique and weird and all these different elements make us who we are, right?
Exactly. Makes us human.
Yeah. Embracing all those differences and frankly using them to your advantage are just smart business in some ways.
Absolutely.
Final real question, and then I'm going to move on to some silly fun questions.
Okay.
What advice do you have for other firms or businesses in general that are looking to start or expand their DEI initiatives?
That's a good one there. I would say, and I shared this again with this recent webinar that we did, you know, there are a couple of different things I would say to this, Bonnie. And the first is, you know, you have to know, you know, where you are at this particular time as an organization to know where you want to go. And in order to do that, you have to take the pulse of your entire organization, and you need to do it through a DEI lens. You want to learn what your employees are experiencing in their everyday work environment, and learn what's working, what's not working, things that you need to focus on to refine those priorities. Specifically at our firm last year, or maybe a little bit more than that now, we engaged a highly recommended DEI consultant that specializes in accounting firms. And we had a DEI assessment. And I encourage everyone that's listening to this and watching this to do the same. And you want to examine where your practices are, specifically from an HR perspective, and look at your talent systems and making sure that they're working equitably for everyone. You want to understand why people may decide to go elsewhere. And you want to see, you know, what things that the organization could have done better and could have been able to retain that talent. And you want to definitely understand and get a knowledge of where employees get stuck. You want to pinpoint those problem areas as it pertains to hiring, promotion, and retention. And lastly, you want to take a look at pay inequity issues. You want to get a scorecard to see how your salaries and reward systems stack up with other organizations, as well as by gender and other demographic areas of interest. You talked about leadership, and you definitely have to have leadership buy-in. Without it, it's not going to work. And I'm happy to say at our firm, we've always had leadership buy-in. And to be honest, you know, it's probably been at varying degrees of buy-in from leadership, but I would say overall and collectively, there was definitely leadership buy-in at our firm. And, you know, we've been doing this for a number of years now, and we've kind of evolved a bit, if you will. So last year, we instituted a DEI council, And our DEI council is comprised of the partner and principal group, not all, but a subset of the partner principal group. And the premise behind that is that we wanted to make sure we had an executive level committee that brings a strategic view of the business strategy, as well as knowledge of every component within the firm. And we just knew having leadership perspective and that leadership view was essential. And since its formation, we've agreed on various priorities and goals, which impact every department and facet of the firm, fully embedding DEI into our culture.
I cannot say a loud enough amen to all of those things. And I want to kind of touch a little bit on the whole figuring out the pulse of where you are as a firm. I do some DEI surveys with firms as well, and you're probably going to hear some things you don't want to hear. You're going to realize that there are people on your team that don't feel that the workplace is an equitable place, or don't feel included, or don't feel like they belong. But until you really know where you are and know what your biggest challenges are, how are you going to be able to measure against anything what you do? And how are you going to address the most important things first? But I will say, and I probably said this before on a podcast, do not ask your people to be vulnerable, to do share their concerns and all of this kind of stuff without doing something with that.
Oh, absolutely.
Because that's just a complete waste of time, and you have lost their trust. Absolutely. And and sometimes it takes saying that, you know what, as firm leadership, we haven't taken this as seriously as we should, but we now hear you and we're going to do X, Y, and Z. And just that alone is reassuring to your employees that, oh, okay, they did read these things. You know, my time spent filling out the comments on all these questions was not wasted. Right. So I am a huge believer in that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. After every DEI activity that we have, we always issue or send out a survey to those that attended to see what their thoughts are, what they liked, what they didn't like, what we can do in the future, as well as reaching out to those individuals that may not have attended to just try and figure out, you know, where they are in their personal DEI journey to see, you know, what can we do? Because we understand everybody's at a different place in this. So we just want to make sure that we are, you know, making ourselves available to all employees, not just those that are underrepresented in corporate America.
Yeah, absolutely. As I tell people a lot of times, particularly those that are kind of pushing back a little bit on efforts, this is about making the pool bigger. This is about creating opportunities for individuals that may have been overlooked, or and also for the firm to hire those individuals or work with those clients that you may not have worked with in the past. So it's a positive thing for everybody. It's not Absolutely. The idea of pushing anybody out.
Exactly. The pie just gets bigger for all, not that your slice of the pie is getting smaller. So that's always a way that I've tried to look at it.
I agree. So to end, I have a couple of fun questions. I just find the answers too fun to hear.
Okay.
So when you were 5 years old, what did you want to be when you grew up?
5 years old. Wow. That was so long ago. I couldn't tell you what I did 5 hours ago, let alone what I did that many number of years ago. At five, I guess, you know, probably was like, you know, most people at five, you know, either wanted to do something, be like my parents, or, you know, a firefighter or a policeman. But I will share this, you know, with regards to my interest in accounting and audit and wanting to be a CPA, I first got my first taste of it in high school. In 11th grade, I had an opportunity to take a class in accounting as an elective, just like a lot of people at that time that had that misconception that you had to be smart or know math well in order to be a successful accountant, which isn't true. But, you know, I held that same belief at the time, took the class, did well in the class, and had the opportunity to take a follow-up class my senior year. And at that time, had the opportunity to meet someone in the profession. And that basically solidified, my desire and interest in accounting.
I think that's great, particularly since you weren't in high school, 3 or 4 years ago. And I hear more and more about firms that really are creating relationships with high schools. College relationships are pretty common, and that has been going on a long time. But with the pipeline and recruiting issues that the profession is facing, getting to that high school level and telling people what the job really is, it can make a real difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We have to make the profession sexy, as hard as it may be to do it. I think we have to make it sexy. We got to make it, the stereotypes about the profession, we have to do away with it and just increase the exposure. I think all of those things will definitely help. And as you mentioned, reaching out to the high school level, because a lot of times by the student being in college, they will have made up their mind about what particular area of focus they like to study. So, reaching out to the high school level is important. Just wanted to commend my firm again for allowing me the opportunity to outside of work, be active in that effort to try and increase the numbers. Currently, I'm the Eastern Region President of NABA, formerly the National Association of Black Accountants. So in doing that work, I'm responsible for an enormous territory, which includes professional as well as student chapters. So that allows me to, try to get a pulse of what's going on, and whatever I could do to assist, I'm always all for it.
So if you are given a chance to travel anywhere for free, you don't have to worry about time off or any of those restrictions that hinder our travel plans, where would you go and why?
Travel anywhere for free?
For free.
I'm just thinking off the top. First thing that came to my mind on that one, Bonnie, outer space, to the moon or somewhere. Just to, travel where, few have traveled before, to be able to say, I checked that one off the bucket list. It's funny because, now that brings me to thinking again about a lot of the work that my firm does. Although we are a full service firm, a lot of the work we do encompasses working with nonprofit organizations. And these nonprofit organizations will be all over the world. So as a result, have had the opportunity to travel internationally quite a bit. So had the opportunity to check quite a few checks off that bucket list. And again, while, not being for free, I will say it wasn't on my dime. So that makes it a little bit better.
Yeah, that's a great opportunity.
Absolutely.
And finally, if you could have one superpower, what would it be?
Superpower. I don't know if this is a superpower, Bonnie, but I would say if I had the ability to go back in time to get a do-over. I think a lot of people will share, and unfortunately, a lot of young people may not believe this, but, time is your most valuable resource. And before you know it, your time on this planet will be over. So, in thinking about having that superpower to be able to go back in time and get more time in this thing, this precious thing that we call life, I think I would like to have that superpower. Not saying that I would do anything differently, but just, having to experience it all over again.
That's a cool perspective. I like that, but I would want to be able to take my loved ones with me too.
Okay. I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because like my husband and I joke, we actually worked for the same company when we were in our 20s, but we didn't meet until through a totally separate thing in our 30s. Okay. So we're like, I wonder what, if we had met then, would we have had all those years together? And you never know, but it'd be kind of interesting to find out, I guess.
Yeah. Good old time machine.
Yeah, there you go. Well, thank you so much. I have so enjoyed this conversation, as I have all others that I've had with you, and really appreciate you, sharing your knowledge and wisdom with listeners today. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Bonnie. Always a pleasure seeing you.
Thank you for listening to Move Like This, brought to you by the Accounting Move Project and sponsored by Moss Adams and SACPRO. If you'd like to learn more, visit our website at accountingmoveproject.com. Don't forget to subscribe and share with your friends and colleagues too. I'm your host, Bonnie Buell-Russick, and until next time, keep moving forward.